Hey everybody, it's Scott here. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. Hope everyone's surviving this snowstorm here on the East Coast. So curl up on your couch and listen to this great new episode for your ears. Now let's talk about some of the sponsors we have on the show before we get at it. One of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing, located on Main Street in the old bank building in Hackettstown. Just a great place to go grab a beer. They always have 8 seasonally inspired ales, and just a really great vibe for a craft brewery. They got the Hackettstown St. Paddy's Day celebration and parade coming up on Sunday, March 11th, starting at 3 p.m. And they have their world-famous Irish Red on tap named Rose Matter. They may also have a surprise Irish Stout served on Nitro, which is Guinness style. So make sure you go check out Manskirt Brewing. Now, Demented Brewing is another brewery that we are lucky enough to work with. They're located in Middlesex, New Jersey, and the cool thing about them is they have so many different beers. They have 16 different beers on tap. They got barrel legions, they have sour programs, something different every Tuesday, new releases on Sundays. They just released The Devil Went Down to Georgia, their new Nitro Peach Sour Smoothie. Now, that doesn't sound good. I don't know what it does. But make sure to go check out Demented Brewing. Stop by, grab a beer, and tell them Verbal Shenanigans sent you. That is Demented Brewing. Now, Susan Rahm is a woman out of Toronto, Canada, who works with senior executives in leadership development and also runs a business as a speaker agent for some of the guests that we've had on this show. Now, Susan works with a gal from Wisconsin named Kim Ward. She was a guest back on our show a little while back. And they are tirelessly advocating and raising money to inspire and empower a group of women and kids in Nepal. So far, their efforts have raised enough money to put all 14 kids into school for the very first time this year, and have helped a group of ladies start a sewing business making quilts. 13 quilts have been sold over 4 different countries, so they are pushing to figure out the next phase of sustainability for the business. So it's a great cause. Go donate at their GoFundMe at /Vimla, V-I-M-L-A. So make sure to go check that out. That's just a really good cause we are happy to be working with. Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F, Nation, stands for Wake Up Live Free Apparel. It's the world's next hottest and biggest designer brand. No matter what your goals in life, as long as you are pursuing it, Wolf Nation is the brand for you. Follow them on Instagram. They're taking pre-orders right now and all sorts of stuff. If you checked out their Instagram lately, they've been putting out all sorts of snapbacks and sweatpants and sweatshirts. So make sure to check them out. You can DM them at Wolf Nation, email them at Wolf at WolfNation.com, and also follow them on Twitter. Remember, it's only a dream if you don't pursue it. Wolf Nation. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. We are a trivia company. We are all over New Jersey in craft beer bars and breweries. Come on out. You can be in last place and win a prize to a brewery. It's just a fun night out. Come see me Wednesdays at Tap House 15. That is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, now we got a fun show for you today. First on the show, we have members of the Totem Crew. They are family that has been sailing around the world for 10 years, nonstop, raising their family on the boat. So just a really interesting story on how that happened, how they survived. Then we also have one of the owners of a new football league called the A7FL. So make sure to check it out. Lots of fun, guys. So with that, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, my name is Bian Gifford. I'm here with
Jamie.
And we are from Sailing Totem. We've been sailing around the world. We're here with Verbal Shenanigans, and we can't wait to share our crazy life.
It's fun. Yeah. I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic, which makes them not shenanigans at all, really. Even shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Days are numbered, pal.
You're going to kill me?
Those days were numbered a long time ago. If I didn't kill you at this point, we're okay. You got one more week left on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Well, at least live.
Let's make it count. I have nothing.
So, a.k.a. the use.
Yeah, yeah. Why change plans now?
Why contribute now?
Well, I had this great musical number, but I'm like, nah.
I had people. I had brass section.
Mm-hmm. It was great, man.
But anyway, everybody, welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Episode 190-something, 191 maybe.
I think one.
Climbing our way to 200.
We're going
to
get there, buddy. It's going to happen.
Yep. We're still going to have 8.5 fans. We're still going to keep this going.
All in other countries. None of them that speak English. Some of them don't even have internet. I don't know how they download it.
Well, I did. It was kind of weird. I did Levity Live the other day.
Which
was kind of, you know, like as a comedian, it's the most beautiful club I've ever seen. We've been there before.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah. As far as a place to go watch comedy, I've done the Stress Factory, which was really awesome. But it's like that place is like, whoa, that's like a gorgeous club. And, like, a guy runs, like, kind of like a showcase kind of show. So I knew I wasn't going to be doing long.
Yeah.
But I thought there'd be, like, maybe 15 people in the audience.
Like a bringer kind of show.
Yeah, there was probably about 120 there. But it was also, like, 120 in that place is only, like, a third. It's always the room size, right?
They have, like, 4 layers of audience. So, yeah, 120 is probably the first 2 sections.
It was, like, that first bottom section, which is all I could ever imagine. And, like, it was like, you know, like, if I did this house, like, 40 people would feel gigantically full. But when you do 120 in, like, a 300-person thing, it's like, well, it's pretty full.
Yeah.
And it was weird. It was a good learning experience for me because it was like when you're doing jokes on stage to, or even like on the floor to like a small group, they hit immediately. Like, I realized that like some of my jokes, like the laughter, maybe because they weren't good jokes, but but like the laughter wasn't like right in your face. It kind of seemed
it's like sparse.
Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like ha ha ha, you know, like, and in this big room where you don't know if you're doing well. So that's why I can't imagine like guys in theaters what they feel like. That was my first thought. Like Sebastian, who just sold out the Toronto Arena, like where the Raptors play, and Kevin Hart, who did that 60,000 person arena,
the Philly Stadium.
Like, it's got to be like you say a joke, and you probably coach to like don't worry about any reaction, because like by the time it hits them, it's gonna be like a minute and a half. You know,
yeah,
like, you gotta like it was a weird experience. It's the most beautiful club I've ever played, and like it's funny, you almost like. You're like, oh, I just want to get a picture with the audience. It, like, you want to like frame that in your mind. Like, okay, I did that club. You know, like, it was really cool. I thought my set, like, if I could give it a grade, it was like a B-.
Okay.
It was a 6-minute set, so it was very hard to get into like a
condensed kind of thing. And
I have like my bits are kind of like big chunks. Like they're big chunks. Like I'm not like a one-liner comic. There was a comic there who was like an old man, and he did all the like. My balls are hanging so low.
Hello.
She asked me for a stool and a piss sample. I just gave him my underwear. And like,
oh.
He was murdering because it like a 6-minute set, that's what you need. Like, boom, 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 boom.
Rapid fire.
Yeah. And I was like, I did okay. I watched my set back because a guy recorded for me, and I actually feel better about it because when you get off stage, I'm like, And I watched it back. I'm like, oh, okay. I did fine. But definitely a different experience that I've never done.
It sounds like something where you almost got to train yourself to like, all right, give it like 5 seconds, next joke. Don't even almost put like earplugs in your ear so you don't even factor
in. And even what they say when you're doing like the club, like you're always faster than you think, right? Like you are always looking for that immediate reaction. Sometimes it takes 3 seconds to get it to the audience. So how many times have you been told to slow down?
Yeah.
And I'll be like, I really slowed down tonight. I felt great, and I'll listen to it. I'm like, hey, guys. For 10 years. Who's married here? I'm like, they must think I'm like on methamphetamine. Yeah. Like, but
hey, we got 25.
It was a cool experience overall. So it was.
Do you consider that the biggest place you performed at?
Probably.
Yeah.
As far as like notable places, is that and Stress are the two ones that I've heard. I've done all the not all the clubs, but I've done a couple clubs in the city. It's like, whoa, he did those clubs, but those clubs are like 50, 60 people bringers, mm-hmm. and like the ones I've done. It's all a joke. Guys, listen, yeah. You see, Scott Brennan's done a stress, Scott Brennan's opened up for like someone in the Stress Factory. They've done a bring your show, like a showcase show. Yeah. I haven't really been on the circuit on that. But it just gives you a little bit of credibility, to try to get the next bigger show.
It's a game. Yeah, it's the underlying joke of, stand-up comedians trying to work it where it's like they get the intro, he performed a blah, blah, and the audience is like, oh, wow. Yeah, and all of us in the back are like, you brought 15 people there. That's why you were there. Yeah,
or he did that. There were 8 people at the bar show.
He carries his equipment. That's why he was there.
But
in our words, we love each other in comedy.
No, it's more about the honesty. It's fun to be honest. It's like, I don't know. It was fun to go up, though.
Yeah.
But it was cool to be on that stage, like this giant, gigantic stage. Like, whoa. Like, I don't need this much room. And I move around a lot when I do comedy. Like, I move around a lot when I'm sitting here.
You feel like they should have had some more furniture on stage, where you could have worked with it more.
Like one of those early 90s comedy sets where there's a whole house in the background.
My teacher said would work well on that couch right there. I'm going to just lay down for a minute.
But I think we might as well get to our first guest here.
All right.
All right, buddy. I think it's guest time. I think it's about that time in the show.
It feels like guest time, Scott.
It does. It's
very comfortable. The temperature, the wind is just at the right state. I say bring on a guest.
Now, exactly what does the wind have to do with guests again?
When it's blowing out of the northwest, it gets the juices flowing in your brain to have a conversation with an enlightened individual.
I don't like when you talk about flowing juices. It makes me uncomfortable.
It's, it's the body. I can't change it in any way.
All right, so who do we got here?
We will be talking to the family from Sailing Totem, more specifically the mother behind. They've been on the seas pretty much since 2008, traveling around the world, seeing all different destinations, Australia, Africa, South America. And we're going to be talking to them about their world journeys.
The family of 5, right?
So that's correct.
It's interesting. All right, so let's give them a call. All right, so we are joined by 2 of you there? I think I heard both of you, right?
Jamie and I, my name's Bian. Jamie and I are here together, and the kids are in...
Hola!
The kids are in hailing range. Got one in the cockpit, one on the other side of the main cabin, and one tucked away in his cabin.
Ah, yes, tuck one away. That's just,
keep one in the hole. That's a key.
Yep. If you got 3 kids, you always got to have one in the hole. That's the secret to raising.
They're kind of valuable commodities, and we had to make our way around the world somehow. And sometimes it's a potential in your back pocket to cash one in.
Mm-hmm. So where are we calling you today? You guys are in Panama, correct?
We are in Panama.
Hello in Panama.
We are lined up to transit from the Atlantic to the Pacific side through the canal, hopefully in another week-ish.
Wow. Now, let's start at the beginning here. Where did this – were you guys big sailors before the idea of constantly sailing and traveling around the world? Were you just hobbyists, or how did this all start?
I married into it. The simplest answer. My husband, Jamie, here, sailed professionally.
I grew up sailing and sailed professionally and had a dream when I was a kid that when I was an adult thought was kind of a dumb thing and gave up on it. And then I...
convinced him that it was a...
Yeah, happened to find somebody who talked me back into it. And so here we are.
What a great way to live.
And I mean, the interesting thing is you guys kind of did the opposite. Most people, when they get together, they go, all right, let's get this crazy adventures done before you have kids. You guys chose to do it after you had 3 children and all. What came about with the timing and why you chose that?
Yeah, it turns out that when you're going to have children, you get a lot of people that tell you it goes by way too quickly. And we heard that enough, so we thought...
We took it at value.
Maybe there's a way to make it not go by so quickly.
Yeah. And it's true, because, wow, we left with these cute little cherubs with, pinchable cheeks and Shirley Temple curls.
They were nice back then.
They were so, so adorable. And, people... little old ladies in the public market in Mexico would come up and fondle them. Now we have teenagers who talk back to us and don't agree and are less malleable, but it really did fly by so fast. It's our 10th year out living on the boat, sailing, traveling full time.
Yeah, and they are good kids, but they do talk back now.
Do you ever threaten them with throwing them overboard? Is that one of the punishments? Like, you got to swim back to shore?
No, we haven't done that. That seems cruel. We have threatened them. We think they would fetch good money in a few places we've been.
I guess that's the hardest place to have an argument. I'm so mad at you, and all you can do is go on to the other side of the boat, really.
Exactly.
Well, in one sense, yes, because it's this relatively small space. I mean, we live in the tiniest of tiny homes, in a sense. But at the same time, we have this concept of a massive backyard, and I think that's ingrained in our psyche, so that we don't feel constrained to a small space. There's always somewhere to go.
So when there's a disagreement, a kid can get in the dinghy and row away very rapidly.
All right, so tell us a little bit about this. So you guys set sail. You said you're 10 years. When you set up the sail, is it like, do you guys pick a destination to go to and then hang out there for a while? How does this planning start? I can't imagine it's just hop in the boat and go. I'm sure there's a lot of thinking and planning beforehand. How do you guys go about planning where you're going?
So on a day-to-day basis, there's very little planning, but there's a lot of bigger picture planning, and we tend to have sort of a 6-month view on what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot to do with the weather and staying safe. So you guys, I imagine, heard a lot about the really bad hurricane season that just happened in the Caribbean.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So one of, you know, for us, the big picture planning is don't be there, or
it turns
get away.
Out we were there.
Yeah, we made a mistake of actually being there, but the intention was not to be there, and we were working our way away from it, and actually we were within a couple of weeks of being where each of the two really bad hurricanes hit, but moving south and moving away. But so we have this sort of big picture idea of our planning in terms of which hemisphere are we going to be in, and then that breaks down into, on an everyday basis, we really don't have a schedule. We're much more, well, what should we do this week?
Yeah, so if we're in an ocean, we say, you know, what are the places we can go? What are the islands and the countries? And then where's the hurricane season? We don't want to be in that part, so we go somewhere else. And it slowly forms a path.
When you're planning out these trips, like, how much rest can you really do? Does somebody have to, like, man the boat during nighttime? Or is it just something where you can coast throughout the night?
100% of the time.
It takes womaning the boat.
Helming. Let's call it helming.
Oh, okay. And, I apologize.
It's 2018, Mike. It's helming.
I didn't know there was sexism in Panama. I apologize. I apologize.
Actually, the term really is gender neutral. It's standing watch.
Oh, okay.
And someone is standing watch.
We're often sitting while standing watch.
Yeah, actually, often. 100% of the time. So if we're on a passage of, say, 5 days, someone is always awake and responsible for the boat. And in the middle of the night, that means that we have a rotation system. And as the kids have gotten older, actually, it's been a tremendous help because it eases the burden on Jamie and I, and it's easier to get rest. But someone is always awake.
We're only moving at night about 5% of the time, which doesn't equate that much in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time we're enjoying a nice night.
It's a good point. Like, you know, we're not always sailing. We're sailing, you know, maybe day sailing here and there, but passage making where we are underway in the middle of the night literally is, as Jamie said, it's like 5% of the time.
Hmm. Now tell us a little bit about, like, raising kids in this with this idea of
a terrible idea. Nobody should do
it. Yeah, we'll figure that out. Well, then we can tell you.
So what is it like for them as far as, you know, this is very unconventional, and, you know, being outside of schools and, you know, having the friends next door and riding a bike. How did you guys go about, like, planning a family and also bringing your family up in your dream of sailing the world?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And actually, one way to think about it, and I think the way it often looks from the outside, is that we've taken what we want to do in our lives as parents and forced it on our kids. But the reality is actually, this is what every parent does, whether mm-hmm. it's what their model is a suburban happy family lifestyle with right. a picket fence and dog and a mini van, or whether it's something a little crazier like ours.
Yeah, and it's just a perception of what normal is. Mm-hmm. Our deal was in the 2002, we had an unfortunate year where my mother passed away from cancer and my sister got cancer and a whole bunch of stuff went on that made us reevaluate what's really important in life and what there's no guarantees and all that. So at that point we had two very small children and we decided to make a plan to go live a different lifestyle for a while. Mm-hmm. We had no idea what that was going to look like or for how long it would happen. And along the way of preparation and a 5-year plan, a third child happened, something about a date night and I don't know, too much wine, but we kept to it, and it's hard to stick to it for 5 years to plan finances and save money and live frugally and all of that. But we did it and we got out and then as the kids,
and then we got hooked.
We're a hook. But as the kids got older, when we began, they were 4, 6, and 9. We had told them we're going on this big trip. We're going to go see whales and dolphins and countries and people. And they were excited about the big trip. It wasn't about sailing.
Right.
That was just a vehicle. It was the goal of traveling. And so they were all pretty excited, which was great. It makes it easier. And after a while, it just became not this unusual thing. It just became normal life for all of us. So having to, you know, walk 2 miles to get bread and beer or whatever is normal. We don't have a car and haven't for 10 years.
Like, how often do you have to port in, take in supplies or do maintenance on your boat? How often do you have to do, for lack of a better term, the mundane things of these travels?
Sure. Every day. Our life is actually consumed with mundane activities. Truly.
Despite the glamorous look of it. Yeah.
So, you know, we may, you know, picture us in a hammock swinging between palm trees. I got an umbrella drink. It's turquoise water. That doesn't happen so much. Our life truly is consumed because we don't have a lot of conveniences. Basic things often take us much longer to do. And maintenance on the boat is simply something that needs constant attention about what's important to do now, what do we have to plan ahead for, what we need parts for.
The toilet is clogged again, and it really needs to be clear.
Yeah, because nobody wants to fuck it.
but in terms of going out and getting provisions and things, it's really based on the convenience or inconvenience of mm-hmm. it. So we're crossing the Pacific Ocean. We were in Mexico in 2010 planning that.
And we spent a couple thousand dollars
on thousands of dollars buying 9 months worth of food.
Right.
And you would get some fresh stuff in some of the islands along the way, but you can only eat so many yams when you're in the South Pacific. You want other things as well.
It's also about remote islands like that. Things are either scarce, yeah, or unpredictably available, or have bugs. So flour and pasta, things like that, have been transported a long way and have more chances for weevils to get in and hatch. And they just cost more because there's a transportation cost involved that we don't have to. So by spending a pile in Mexico to provision up, we ended up having a very frugal year in terms of provisioning, despite high costs in South Pacific Islands, because other than fresh produce, we were pretty much there.
And I must confess that we were a little bit too frugal in the last little stretch of provisioning. We were in this part of Panama, and we ran out of toilet paper.
Oh. Yeah. Talk about things you should never do. We traded with our neighbors.
And a banana leaf is no proxy.
That was a first. I want you to know that was a major provisioning fail, but that was a first.
You don't just like dunk in the off the side of the boat in the water, you know?
That's sort of that bidet effect. Yeah.
Now, I heard you mention many times about living frugally and whatnot, but how do you guys earn finances to do this, to be able to buy food and provisions? How do you guys make money?
That's a really good question. I think there's a perception that we're out here on a grand vacation and that we must be independently wealthy, and we're actually we're not. We did have a very comfortable life before we went and took off in this life, but we also thought we'd only be gone for a few years. We assumed our kids would want to come back and go to high school and things like that and have quote unquote normal lives. And as a family, we've all wanted to continue to do this, we had to find ways to afford it when the savings for that sabbatical trip went out. Mm-hmm. So it's changed over time. And right now, the way we support ourselves is through kind of a few different trickle income streams that are basically digital nomad type occupations that we can do more or less from anywhere.
Right.
Jamie's background is that he was a sailmaker way back when. And he, again, is a sailmaker, but instead of being a hands-on, I'm sewing them in the boat guy, he knows how to work with someone to specify what they need, and then he's got partners who are building it and getting it to the customer. And then we also do some writing. We do freelance writing for some magazines. We have a blog that's got some trickle income associated with it. I wrote a book. And we do coaching for people who want to do this crazy thing. And the coaching is actually the newest and the most fun, because we really think this is an amazing way of life. If we can help more people successfully transfer their lives into it, to try it out for a year or long term, awesome. If you can shortcut that, make it realistic, everybody's winning.
With all the travels, I mean, you've been to, I'd say, Australia, South America, Africa. Has there been like a country or an experience that almost like surprised you, how like breathtaking the views or the experiences that you had there?
Yeah, New Jersey.
We've had so many of those. It's hard to, it's hard to convey. We've been to 46 countries and territories. And, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff out there in the world. Have you ever been to Papua New Guinea and have a school teacher try to convince you that mermaids are real? because they've seen them, like, no joke. Mm. And they take the little children sometimes.
Well, just so we're clear, they are real, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, okay, good, good.
That's our next guest.
Yeah.
He's a school teacher, so they must be real. To trekking across South Africa and seeing African animals in the wild, and going up a river in Borneo to go and to see orangutans in the wild, to have whales jumping around the boat and swim with dolphins and giant manta rays, to go into a hut where they're one generation away from
headhunting.
And when they take you to the head house, it literally means...
We thought
means,
it was going to be the chief's house, like the big guy. No, it's where the heads were kept.
And they're still there.
Yeah.
There's a big basket with all the skulls
over the fire, like over the smoke, right?
Jeez. Where was that?
That was in Borneo.
That was one of the Malaysian provinces of Borneo.
Yeah.
Well, luckily they didn't take yours.
Yeah. So we kept kids for that one.
I mean, it's just amazing to hear like how much you guys do and how far you go, and that you're able to kind of keep this thing moving. I have to imagine that there's definitely been some obstacles and some hardships that we probably don't even think of, but obviously this is also, you can't predict everything. What are some of the dangers you guys have come across over the years, or something that, like, an emergency that's happened? I'm sure there's been something along the way.
One of the scariest things happened to us, actually, just in the last couple of years. We were sailing from Bermuda back to the U.S. It was going to be our first time back in the U.S. since 2009. This is June 2016. I'm on watch. It's the middle of the night. It's really rough weather. It was much rougher than we anticipated. And I smell burning. I smell plastic burning, that acrid smell that means we've got a fire somewhere on the boat. This was terrifying. Fires on a boat may have a couple of minutes. And we are in conditions that I'm petrified to consider launching our life raft in, but we're considering we have to do that. I go and I wake up Jamie, and we wake up our son, Niall. He was 16 at the time, or he just turned 17, I guess. Niles starts getting the ditch kit and the life raft ready. Jamie and I are looking around for the fire. We found it, is the very short version. But
boats have a lot of material that burn, and so if you get a fire on a boat, you don't get much time. You get about 2 minutes to figure it out. And so that was spooky. Another one, we were in Indonesia, at the west end of New Guinea Island, the group of islands in Indonesia, and the largest Muslim country in the world. And Kyle and I were on the boat, and our two daughters were off swimming. And this boat came screaming up with a powerboat in an area where everybody has dugout canoes. And we thought, oh, this isn't good.
Well, something's going on. Like, why is this powerboat bearing down?
And all these guys were in the boat. There's probably 7 or 8. And some had camo and some had head covering.
Like ski mask, like balaclavas.
Oh, wow.
And we thought, this is interesting. And they're pretty aggressive. And they come right up to the side of the boat and guys start jumping on the boat.
And you do not do that in any country. I mean, that's just, it's a very aggressive thing.
And,
shit moment.
Yeah, it was a little bit like that, except
we're losing a little bit.
Hold on. Just say what you were saying again. We just lost you for like 10, 15 seconds there.
Okay. So this is going on, and fortunately, we've been in a lot of strange places, and we didn't overreact in any way. And there's no terrorism in Indonesia, taking boats, taking people like us, anything. So they came up, they jumped up on the boat. We're a little bit like, what's going on? But then I looked down, and I saw one of the guys was carrying a clipboard, and I thought, okay, terrorists don't normally give a how was your experience survey at the end of the event. So what it was a good lesson in not judging too much,
jumping to conclusions.
Right.
Yeah, our 13-year-old just passed that comment.
Yeah.
With taking your own pulse to be able to sort of try to assess a situation instead of overreacting to a situation.
It turns out that they were the park rangers making sure that we were there legally. You're supposed to have permission in this
huge protected
area.
Reserve.
And then we were best friends. They invited us to their camp, and we had a nice fish dinner.
Awesome. Their camp is that they lived on an island which is smaller than a professional baseball field. Actually, it's probably a quarter of the size of a professional baseball field.
Much, much smaller.
They shared it with itinerant fishermen, and they literally lived in tents.
They were probably 30 people or 40 people. So we, of course, reciprocated. We invited them for dinner on Totem. And
Totem, I mean, Totem's 47 feet long. It's not a big boat. It's not a small boat. With the five of us, it's a good home. We comfortably have, two people staying with us and maybe 5 people for cocktails. They had, 8 or 9 people?
They showed up. They said, we come to your boat. We have 7 people come to your boat, and we bring the fish. Well, they showed up with 11 people and a bucket of fish, and they said, there's 5 or 6 more people coming.
We had, 18, 19
people on the boat for dinner. And we made pumpkin pie for them, as you do, because...
apple pie and key lime.
Apple pie and key lime pie. And fish that they were filleting off the back of the boat.
I just kept making pots of rice.
What seemed like the scary thing turned out to be a super cool experience.
It was amazing.
Hmm. That's incredible.
Wish more terrorism would end like that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, instead, we were able to learn from a combination. They had indigenous people from the local island, as well as more government types who were managing the officialdom side of this. And they had students who were there kind of as researchers. Yeah. We were able to learn from them about the marine life in the area, about what's happening with these itinerant fishermen and what's their pattern and what are the problems with poaching and the boats that come in and things like that. It was terrific.
Mm. That's awesome. Now, you've been doing this for 10 years. How do you deal with going into ports? And for what I imagine, a passport only lasts about 10 years. Is there are you still under the same kind of rules as in if you flew into a country, or is it different since you're coming in through boats?
They're often different. I mean, they may be the same, they may be different. For example, here in Panama, our friends flew in to visit us, and they show up in the airport and they get a visa on arrival. We arrived into a port and we had to get a marinero visa, and it cost us $105 per adult that our friends didn't pay at the airport. It's not necessarily more expensive most of the time, but it may be different. And we have kind of a specific process. You get an appreciation for how easy it is to be funneled through the cattle cart lines at the airport through, you know, immigration and customs and whatever other security is needed. We usually have to go and find those offices ourselves, go to the port captain, find the immigration office, find the customs officials. It's not usually rocket science. It's just a process to work through, and it usually means getting to meet people and having a good time.
Some places it's a little bit extra interesting. When we went to Comoros, which is a little tiny island nation between Madagascar and eastern coast of Africa, it took 3 days to clear in.
They don't really have a tourism industry.
They have coups. They don't have tourism. They have coups.
Right.
And so when you show up as a tourist, they want to shoot you. But
but you've got to really respect the laws. I mean, boats were showing up there, not checking in immediately. They were thinking, like in a lot of places, you can do it within 24 hours. And pistol showed up and threw him in jail. No questions asked.
Yeah, you meet a lot of military people that way. But there was a guy there who, as far as we know, is the only Comorian Muslim Rastafarian on the island, and he was acting as the agent, self-described agent.
Yeah, he had
agent.
Enough English capability to help us navigate.
And he represented us to the port captain and the military police and all that, but 3 days of negotiation and yelling at each other, saying, you know, that amount of money to come into the country is way too much. That's ridiculous.
Nobody else will come if you charge that much.
Yeah.
But what was fascinating was then that we got this dose of cultural experience, too, to come to appreciate a place where it's about the stories that you tell. It's about it's not about a written word in cabinet files and something codified in a spreadsheet. It's about the monologue. And we would sit and listen to our agent talk for 15 minutes about us, our case. We have no idea what he's saying, but he's making a case and the officials are listening. And then the officials make a case back.
By the end of it, our Malagash language was quite good.
Comorian.
Comorian, right. Yeah.
But that kind of oral tradition that we've lost.
I can't. It's hard to like even wrap my head around, like, you know, obviously your guys' lifestyle and the things you do. But how do you guys like being, you know, parents and also being a couple and having a relationship? How do you guys what do you guys do to kind of keep that together on the boat? Is it all focused on sailing? How do you like? Is it all about where you travel to? Are you guys more excited about their time off the boat, like where you get to see? Or is it like, how do you guys keep a well-rounded relationship when you see each other all every second of every day on this boat?
Honestly, we have no idea. it's the weirdest thing to be
around. I did wonder about it before we left.
Your partner and your children 24 hours a day, every day. And we really are.
I used to joke it was like dog years for a relationship because, you know, when you're in living a normal life, you get to see your partner like a little bit in the morning and a little bit in the evening, or maybe only one or the other. And then on the weekends, between chores and trips to Home Depot or Costco. And instead, we really do have this 24/7. But it turns out we like each other.
No, that's good. That's good, at least.
That's pretty rare with a married couple. I gotta be honest.
But it was dog years to figure it out.
But it's nothing like that is perfect. And we all have moments where we need a little space. And, and I think it's because we're around each other a lot that we understand each other better. And you know when somebody's grumpy and, you know, you give them some space, or they go off and get provisions in town, or go to the beach and kick coconuts around, or whatever it is. I think that's part of it, is being more in tune with what the other person has going on, or you have going on. I wake up and the coffee was like crap today, because who likes Colombian coffee? And then say you're grouchy and you just need some time alone, and you find that. But
and you got to find a rhythm of the sort of the yin yang of what works for each of you in terms of responsibilities on the boat. Because you can't have either person feeling like they are resentful of the other because of who has taken on which jobs.
Who's doing the important job when you don't appreciate what the other person is doing, when in fact
it's a whole picture.
What they're doing is also important, even though it doesn't, it may not feel like it.
And this is what we see in other partnerships on boats sometimes, that resentment comes up if one person feels like, well, I'm the only one doing this.
Now, what about raising your kids? Like, as far as, like, do they ever have, like you said, that they're totally on board with it, but do you ever see, like, them starting to say, like, oh, maybe I want to do something different? Like, how old is your oldest kid again? You said he was 17 or?
18.
He's 18 now. He's actually waiting to hear from colleges. And
okay.
That'll be happening this year.
Always one of our criteria for carrying on cruising was that we're all happy doing it. And literally the kids have a say in that. If our youngest, even years ago when she was really young, said, you know, I don't like this, we would have talked about it and tried to figure out what she didn't like and make a change. But if it ultimately led to us not cruising anymore, then that was the right thing to do.
Right.
But when in Australia, we paused to try and make some money, and the kids were in regular school for about 6 months. Yeah, we ran out of money.
$100 left in the bank account.
and we were there for about 18 months. We're getting ready to pack it up, and said to the kids that, okay, guys, we've got a little bit of money saved again. We think we're going to go off cruising, or do you want to stay in Australia a little bit longer and go to school? And they were like, no, let's go. Let's get back to the good stuff with homeschooling, of course, as well, but getting out and seeing stuff, different lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, is that going to be, like, a big thing for you guys? Like, if your son does go off to college, that's got to be – if you're together for 10 years – well, obviously, you had him for 17, 18 years, but you're sailing for 10 years, and then one – it's like one – not only is it a family member, but it's part of your crew, too. Like, is that going to be a big adjustment for you guys?
I think that's hard for any family to – figure out how you rearrange the space in your lives.
Right.
But I would also say at the same time, we've had our time together as parent-child relationship, and now he's a young adult.
Yep.
And we love that transition.
And he's really ready for it. It's going to stink for us, but
he's ready for it, and we're ready for it. We want to see him do the next thing. He's an interesting kid, and we don't know what's going to happen, and maybe we screwed him up and he's going to be in therapy the rest of his life. but we think he's an interesting kid, and you know, we want to see him find his path, whatever that is.
Now, is there an eventual end point do you see for the trip, or a goal for certain areas? Like, I see you haven't done anything Europe or Northern Asia. Do you have a set plan going forward right now?
We basically have the sort of, you know, mantra of three parts, which is we need to be able to afford to keep doing this. And, well, that happened once where we ran out of money and we fixed that. We need to have our health. And fortunately, we've not lived off of very much.
Yeah.
And everybody has to want to do it. And as long as we've got those three things, then we keep going. There's not an end in sight. And we've kind of stayed away from the regional goals. I mean, like, we're getting really close to closing the loop on technically circumnavigating, which is incredible. I can't believe it. But it was never a goal. It's something that sort of it's going to happen now. And part of the reason, in fact, that our son is applying to college this year instead of last year, he's basically taken a gap year on top of the prior 9 gap years. we realized that if he left for school last year, the rest of us would circumnavigate and he wouldn't. And that, as a family, was something that was entirely unacceptable to him. And we thought, well, that's not right for us either. We want to do this as a family. So that refocused our geographic goal. So much more to see. And honestly, when we look at the map, it's like we've got this one little line. That's what we've seen. We've not seen so much of the world.
Yeah. So we'll go through the canal. We're up to Mexico. We're going to go visit friends and family on the West Coast because we haven't been there in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then we're back on for a couple of months. Then we're back on the boat. And our boat needs a little bit of TLC right now because there's a lot of wear and tear in sailing around the world. And then we're looking to set up to sail across the Pacific Ocean again. And it turns out the Pacific Ocean
North
is
Asia.
Yeah, the Pacific Ocean is very big. It's very big.
Yeah. And we stayed in the Southern Pacific most of the last time we crossed in 2010. And I used to live in Taiwan. I finished high school in Taiwan. I would love to take Totem back there. She was built there. I would love to cruise in Japan. I hear it's amazing. There's some very pretty islands in between Taiwan and Japan. We'll see. Who knows?
Now, obviously, you guys, it's been really cool talking to you. I could ask you a bazillion questions. And it just sounds like you have a very good outlook on what you guys do. But what do you guys do before we go? What do you guys do, like, on an average night, like, out on the ship, other than crew? Like, are you able to get, like, internet or watch TV or is
no.
it? Like, I don't know if it's some special satellite or something or.
We're good friends with Elon Musk. You know,
so nice, nice.
Hey, El.
TV, no.
What's TV? Yeah. Actually, that was one of the really weird things about getting back to the U.S. last year, or I guess late, or 2016, when we've been gone for so long. The way you watch TV has completely changed. You don't, like, change a channel anymore. It's all this. Anyway, that was just.
Yeah, that's normal for them. It's very
sorry.
Still.
It was really weird for me.
But, when we get to a country, we look to try and get internet, whatever the access ability is there, and it varies country to country. But most places, even Madagascar, has internet capability, mm-hmm. and for us that is kind of a lifeline to tie back into staying in touch mm-hmm. with people. And our lifestyle may seem a little bit freaky, but we still like to stay connected with mm-hmm. our culture and the rest of the world. And so
our kids may not have their own phones, but we've tried to help them be as digitally native as possible at the same time, that they're comfortable with devices and they keep in touch with friends over, you know, Google Hangouts, and it's not an unnatural part of their world, mm-hmm. but our ability to access high bandwidth or have heavy data use is constricted.
But at least 6 nights a week, we sit in the cockpit
we
drinking
the
rum
sunset.
And singing sea shanties.
Okay, no.
Naturally.
So that's not true. You forgot the ukulele.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But we do actually spend an inordinate amount of time enjoying a sunset outside with a warm breeze
and
in our family.
And our lifestyle, for many people, they perceive it to be very, very out by ourselves and isolationist or alone. And in fact, it's quite the opposite.
It's quite social.
You can get out to an island and be off by yourself right. and not talk to
you
anybody.
You can choose to be solitary.
But we like being social and being connected. And so we can be in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there'll be two boats or three boats. And within a day or two, you know more about them than the neighbors that you've lived next to for 8 years back in suburbia.
Yep.
And at least some of the neighbors. And it turns out it's a very social.
You'll know them better, but you'll have no idea what they did professionally, because that is the last
thing. And you won't know their last name.
You'll know their boat name, and you'll know what you call them.
Yeah. I mean, that's with all these adventures and everything. Do you almost laugh when somebody tells you, you know, yeah, I was in the line at the DMV for an hour? It's just, can you? I mean, can
no,
you?
We don't laugh.
No, actually, because I think we have our own like little private hells. Like, I had to spend 6 hours waiting for immigration in Panama to get stamped in, and meanwhile, Jamie and the kids are in the boat in the anchorage, and it's not. There are these huge swells rolling in, and I'm worried every minute that I'm on shore that the anchor's not going to hold because of how rough it is, and we're going to have a problem. And meanwhile, we're just in this rural Wild West outpost where they've lost their internet connection to the capital, and so they can't process our visa. And I'm just sitting there, and they're sitting there, and we're powerless. That's my DMV.
I just add that we don't look at our lifestyle as this crazy, wild, weird adventure. To us, it truly is normal, and so we don't judge with what it's like to be back in mainstream, because we grew up that way. Bean and I grew up that way, and our friends live that way, and our family live that way, and it's not it's a way of life, and we have a little bit different. Our kids, that sort of lifestyle is quite different for them. And that's something they're going to have to adjust back to as they rejoin society in whatever capacity they do. Our son will go to school at some point, hopefully later this year, and he's going to have a lot of acclimation to do. One little funny story: we got back to the U.S. for the first time in 7 years, and they're saying, "Wow, the cars are really big here, and are they always so fancy?" And we said, "I don't know." And then they're looking down the street, and this is Connecticut, in this great little town near where I grew up, and they saw these funny things in the sidewalk, and they're like,
"What's that?
What are those?" And we chuckled, and we, you know, "Really, you don't know what those are?" And, "No, what the heck is that? It looked like a robot." And it was a fire hydrant.
Wow.
And so.
And what's that stick on it?
Yeah, and the stick was.
Where's the snow?
Yeah, it's where the snow is. And so, the DMV, I mean, we all make choices, and we all are where we are, and that's fine.
Our son didn't grow up mowing the lawn, but he grew up cleaning the
bottom
weed
of the boat
that's growing on the bottom of the boat.
Yeah. And our little coaching gig now that is, it really is fun, because it turns out a lot of people, it seems like a lot to us, are figuring out that life goes by pretty quickly. And even if it's you go on a 6-month sabbatical or a 10-month or a year long thing,
it's precious.
And whether it's on a boat or an RV or camping or whatever it is, doing something where you're stepping outside of normal life is a cool experience. And that's what we're about. And if we can get, if our little bit is, we can get more people to try something different, because you come away with a very different perspective on the world and who your neighbor is and Muslims and all of this stuff.
You can have a chance to be closer as a family as well.
Yeah. So get out there.
Yes. I would say, well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and just getting an insight. You remind me, we did an interview about a year ago about this couple that they built their own island. Was it British Columbia?
Yeah, just out of Canada.
Yeah.
Oh,
they built their
I know about them.
Also like a fascinating couple that kind of did their own thing and built this like island where they're basically a self-sustainable island, and
they grow plants on there.
It's a floating island. They grow there's a garden, and it just, you guys remind me of them, the same kind of spirit, the adventurous spirit, but also kind of like, hey, this is our, this is our life. It's not really that weird to us, but if people want to like check out your journey and see, get some information on you guys or say hi, where can they go?
Probably the focal point, the best is to go to sailingtotem.com. Totem is the name of our boat, and Sailing Totem seemed like the obvious way to go. And from there, they can find us in whatever their social media channel of choice is, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, and if people have questions about it, send them along. Find us through there, and we're happy to help.
We've got a contact form there, and we love just answering questions that come in through there to help people think how they might step outside and live their lives a little bit differently for even just a little while.
One last question. When you're done with your journey and you come back to the land and all, are you fairly confident you can live that kind of life, or are you afraid you're going to see your spouse like in the middle of a river in a canoe saying, "No, I can't do it. This is my life."
Yelling at the robots.
Yeah, I am scared to go back. Honestly, I know someday it will happen. We see this happen with other people we know out here. Yeah, at some point, the switch flips and you want to be back. I can't fathom that yet.
I have joked that we're spending all of our money and So later in life, when we move back to land, we'll have to pick out a nice bridge we can live under.
But we could do that in a boat.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Right?
But I also don't know that we move back there. And right now, it seems such a foreign concept. Who knows what'll happen? And if we do, great. If that makes us happy, so yeah, we'll see.
Guys, continued success and adventure and all that stuff. And maybe we'll check in with you in the future and see where you guys are at.
Oh, we'd love it. And Scott and Mike, thank you. I appreciate being asked to participate in your podcast.
It was great fun to talk to you guys.
Yeah, thanks for keeping it fun.
Absolutely. We try. Mm-hmm. I got to spend all this time with Mike. So.
You do.
You guys are awesome.
Our podcast studio is our own little boat. You know?
I feel like I've been trapped in a very small boat with Mike for many, many years. So you guys are awesome. Thanks so much.
That was good. For the record, for our audience, it was Wayne Adams and Catherine King from Freedom Cove, the man-made island in British Columbia.
Yeah, that's a great interview. It's a little rough on the audio because of where they were, but that was a really fun interview. I'd like to follow up with them too, see maybe what they're about. But that they reminded me of that. That was the first thing I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Here's a couple that's doing something. Even with the kids part, that's a great, I could see a couple doing this sailing, but when you're raising a family too at the same time and not pushing your adventure on them so much, it's got to be a fine line you got to balance, you know what I mean?
And it's incredible. The kids every year, they're just like, yep, let's keep going. So, they're doing something right out there.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be kind of like a democracy for that to work. Everyone's got to be on board. But fun interview.
Definitely.
All right, Burger. We got yet another guest. We've done this a couple times before, once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
So who we got on the show today?
We have Shenner Korkasis here. He is from the A7FL. He's one of the founders and CEO of the league. That's the American Sevens Football League. It's a semi-pro football league with teams in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, founded in 2015, and is known for full contact football with no padding.
No padding.
Yeah.
I pray that you sign up for that when you get into Georgia. So that
they don't have a team yet. I'm sorry. Jersey has teams.
But if you keep the training up, you might be able to get on that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's give him a call. Hello.
Hey, how are you guys?
Oh, we are doing great, man. How are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for inviting me on, and I'm happy to represent the A7FL. Hopefully we'll pick up a few fans. I know you guys have a big audience.
Well, I mean, it is massive. Once you come on here, it's pretty much going to be rivaling the NFL.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's what we need.
Where are you right now, where we're calling?
I'm in Boca Raton. And once our season starts, I'll be in New Jersey where our operations are ran out of. We're running our season, second season now, from Asbury Park, New Jersey. We have a beautiful stadium there, a purpose-built stadium, a very new stadium at Asbury Park High School. It's an awesome venue.
All right, so tell us how the idea started, the A7FL. Where did this idea come from? And what is the inspiration for it?
My partner, Ryan DePaul, is the godfather of this sport. He organized around 7-on-7 football with no pads, just the same way that we played when we were young. Actually, Ryan and I played this game before he even decided to organize it. So obviously, it's a pickup game. It's easier to get seven guys together. And this was some of the genesis behind the rules and the format of what's now the A7FL. That was back in 2005. Fast forward to 2014, being a lifelong friend with Ryan, I saw what was going on. I saw a great opportunity to take this sport to the national level and make it an extravaganza for TV. And we've made some great progress just in the last 3 to 4 years in doing that.
Now, obviously, anytime somebody brings up football without pads, the first thought is, oh my God, all these people are getting murdered out there, for lack of a better term. What made you go into this, and can you give us a little bit? I see how you had a study done with NJIT on the sport itself. Tell us how it came about, where you felt this could be legit and not everybody would get hurt from it.
Yeah, and that was a key factor. First off, what you just said, the initial reaction to, wow, no pads, no helmet, this is brutal, these are gladiators, this is insane, this is crazy. That's just a built-in marketing. It's brilliant, it's beautiful. The fact is, all of those things, not exactly correct. It's not a gladiator sport. It's not brutal. It's not ultra-violent. It's not less safe than traditional football in so many ways. Not only are there rules implemented in such a way for safety, we have a 3-on-1 throw-off for special teams. We throw the ball. We don't kick the ball. We don't use the goalposts. We're 7-on-7. The width of our field is about 10 yards narrower than the traditional NFL college field. The length is the same. So we make some awesome rule changes. We keep the game fast paced. It's extremely exciting. Once you get past your initial reaction and you watch it, you're hooked. And well, that's what's gotten us all of this attention.
I've actually heard a lot of people say that, like, if you remove the helmets in football, it's actually safer because people aren't leading with this weapon on their head. You know what I mean? Like this concrete head, basically, like, you know, where it's, they feel invincible. They're adjusting to it. They're making tackles with parts of their body that can take it. And I've seen the comparison with rugby, where there's not as many like catastrophic brain, you know, things like that. Now, was that in your mind when you guys created this, or was that just something that came with it?
That's something that over the years started to be evidenced and testimony given by our athletes that, hey, this is safer. I'd rather play this than helmet football. This is safer than helmet football. This is testimony from our athletes, empirical evidence, visual, that was seen. They're not hitting their heads repeatedly like they do when you have a helmet on. They're keeping their head out of the tackle in many ways similar to rugby. But it wasn't until 2015 where we partnered with the New Jersey Institute of Technology, as well as Athlete Intelligence, which was a key partnership, in order to study the safety behind A7FL football.
Are there different rules with tackling, or just by the fact that there is no pads, do they kind of calm themselves down and not try to like lead with the head or anything like that?
In general, it's primarily instinct. You have to wrap up. There are certain rules around tackling. They're in our rule book. But for the most part, it's around the instinct. It's called risk homeostasis. This is something studied in the scientific community. Dr. Eric Schwartz, if you can look him up, is a big proponent and researcher in this field. And the fact is, when you have equipment on and you have a helmet on, a hard plastic and hard equipment, hard padding, you're going to go into the collision with the most protected part of your body by instinct.
Now, what is the goal for the league? What is it? I know you started small. What is the goal? Is it supposed to be like a, do you see it becoming an off-season thing for football players? Do you see it becoming an alternative for like retired players? What is the ultimate goal of the league?
We have a perfect piece to the puzzle, and that's right in between potentially flag football and NFL and college football. Right now, there's a big gap there. There's elimination of tackle programs all over the country. There's flag football until you're 14. We have some things in the works around an A7FL youth format. We have some very notable NFL veterans involved who are all about the youth and saving football, keeping some kind of contact in the game. And whether our youth format is revolving around two-hand touch, tag, or eventually a thud progression, and leading into the A7FL adult format, which is full contact tackle, we have a new piece to the puzzle here, and we think it solves many of the problems today with American football.
How you go about recruiting your players right now? Are they coming to you for tryouts, or you bringing them in? How's this go about?
The players are gangbusters across the country. Our number one following, our number one inquiries, and filling out our player registration forms all over the country. We have a map on our website, and everybody should go and check it out. It's a7fl.com. Stands for American Sevens Football League. You go to the website, you'll see a map, you'll see all of the pinpoints across the country, 100 players here, 500 players here. You know, in Maine, we only have a handful of players. Maine, let's get going.
No. What is the ultimate goal for this? Like, where do you guys see the league going in the next couple of years?
We're a national league in a few years. That's our goal. With NFL veterans now owning teams, the Washington Vipers, a brand new team. You'll see an NFL veteran as the owner. He believes in our sport. More so than that, we have athletes in our league that have made it into the NFL. Now, they were only there for a short period of time, and I'm sure with some luck, they'll be back again, and we'll have other athletes going to the NFL and other major leagues as well. It's working both ways, and it's about to explode, guys.
Ah, that's awesome. Where are you looking to key on your exposure? Are you looking for live crowds at the games, mostly television deals, internet views? Where are you looking to gain more exposure right now?
Well, obviously online, it's huge. Everybody's on mobile. You're on mobile 24/7, and that's where we have 100 million views in 2017. Our viral video landed on Cheddar News. We were invited to the New York Stock Exchange to do an interview. It was a really milestone year for us last year. 11 Sports stepped to the table, a pioneer right now in TV programming with finding a sport like ours and televising our championship to at least 70 million households worldwide. We were, you know, they were calling us from Poland, and they love our game. And I'll tell you what, they love it at Hooters all across the country. They were tuned in.
It's not the only thing they love.
Out of curiosity, with you building your league, how have you seen the play progress since it started in 2015? Do you see more improvement, better players? How's it progressed since the beginning?
Well, one of the key areas is in our distribution and how many people are seeing the A7FL. Right now, we're huge on Facebook. We just started to go onto their new platform. It's called Facebook Watch. And you'll watch our opening day. Tune in on Facebook Watch. Our channel's A7FL TV. And we're going to be live streaming our opening day game in front of the world. Facebook's going to be promoting us to their 15 or 16 million sports fans on their page. It's going to be a really big show.
Now, do you see athletes like, say, like I'm a Giants fan, like maybe Eli hangs it up in the next 2 years. Do you see like a guy like that maybe like coming across and being like, yeah, I could throw for the next 3 years? And is that like what you envision?
Honestly, I haven't thought about that. I have to ask my partner if he has. But I think more so our sport is geared towards the guys who came out of high school. They went into college. Some of them have, some of them haven't. But they wanted to go to the next level. They didn't make it. there's really not too many great options for them right now to stay on the football market. Either they're playing flag football or they're playing full helmet football, probably in the spring and in the fall to keep in shape, or they're playing a mixture of that with flag. A lot of those guys are in the A7FL. It's an awesome format for that. So you're right what you said earlier. It is something for the off season, but that's just part of it. It's really becoming its own movement, its own. We're owning the spring. A7FL is spring football.
Interesting. Now, I got to ask, pretty recently, Vince McMahon came out and he says he's bringing out the XFL. Are you having any concerns with that league starting up, or are you just concentrating on your own product right now?
No, we don't have any concerns with the XFL. To be honest, when you look at it, apples to apples, the NFL is always going to reign supreme. The A7FL is a new sport. It's a new game. It's something that nobody's ever seen before. It stands shoulder to shoulder with the NFL in a few years. Mark my words.
All right. I mean, it sounds great. So if people want to go check out the sport or go see what's going on or watch videos of it, where can they go?
Right over to a7fl.com. You'll find us on YouTube. You'll find us on Facebook. You'll find us on Instagram. We have a lot going on this year. Facebook Watch is huge for us. A7FL TV. Look for our entire season on 11 sports. They're going to step to the table again. Look for our sponsors that support us. Second Skull. They're the soft padded skull cap.
Oh.
Athlete Intelligence makes products that take biometrics on our athletes. These products could be used by youth in leagues across the country, and parents need to look at products like Second Skull and Athlete Intelligence as well.
Awesome. Is there any kind of name we should keep an eye out for as the big name of the A7FL?
Yeah, there's quite a few names. One of them is a guy named Courage Mosey. Okay, he's an athlete he's short to the ground, but he's built stocky. He's like a top. He just spins and spins. You can't take him down. He's on New Jersey BIC. We have a bunch of great athletes in the A7FL, and we're going to be promoting them. We're going to be interviewing them on our new show. It's called A7FL Nation. With host Jeff Fitzgerald. This is another addition to the A7FL family, and we look forward to adding more as we move forward.
That's awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on, and we wish you best of luck with the league, and we hope to see it not even on the internet. We hope to see it on TV soon.
Mm. Awesome. Yeah, look forward to it. I'll share the info once I have it, and hopefully you can pass it on to your fans.
Definitely.
Absolutely, man. Take care, and thanks a lot for giving us this few minutes.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Take care, buddy.
That's a way to end a call.
That is...
What? All right, we're out of here tonight. We want to thank our guests.
What is going on right now?
That's the conference call, I guess.
Mike, you really... Jesus Christ.
Well, we were supposed to have Ryan DePaul also on the show, but unfortunately he couldn't make it tonight. So. No.
Well, that's all right. A7FL might be the next, what's that 3v3 league?
The Big Three.
Big Three. So it might be the next one of those.
You
so
know. Hey.
Go check them out, guys, and...
Yeah, and if you're Jersey, man, they got like three different teams there. I mean, they're local here in the Northeast, and they're expanding. So.
Yeah, you gotta join the Denville Dairies.
Is that what they're called now?
Yeah, they're the they're sponsored by the ice cream shop.
Oh, okay. Did they have like the soft ice cream head man on there?
It's
well, they don't have a helmet, so I guess they shave it into their head.
Yeah, and they actually just wear like whipped cream on their head at the top to get like that cool swirl going. The Denville Dairy is my favorite team.
It's got to be hard to keep it throughout the whole game. You know.
Well, anyway, Denville Dairy's go. you should totally sign up for that football league in Georgia.
I mean, they don't have a team yet, but I mean, I have no objections.
Started. Get you, my own your dad.
Dad, I know I'm living in the basement, but I just bought an expansion team. You know, you just got to give me a couple more months, okay?
Are you moving into your parents' house? I know I was getting like a little like weird about it.
It's an interesting feeling. It's a weird thing, right? I mean, number one, I'm like 40, so it's like the joke you laughed at when you were like 16 and a ha-ha, you're 40 and you live with your parents kind of deal. I mean, all three of my parents' children, I mean, me being the third one, have ended up moving back in with them for different reasons. It's just for, you know, saving money.
I think it's
part
of being a parent.
Yeah, it's like, oh, thank God I got rid of him. In other words, I'll see you in 10 years.
He's going back.
I mean, there's a part of me, it's like, all right, I haven't lived under their roof in 15, 20 years. Do I recall the stuff that would annoy them that I do on a regular basis? And I'm going to be like, Jesus Christ.
I can't wait. They're like, stop podcasting. It's not.
Dad, they're going to be famous. Be quiet.
Dad, we're interviewing people here.
Yeah. Did you talk to the guy with the world's biggest mustache? No, I did.
This guy didn't go to sleep for like 5 days, and I'm really...
Yeah.
He has a story to tell, but not about that. A story to tell about his
diet. He wants his herbs. We love our guests on our show.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those... I'm not worried, but at the same time, I know I'm going to do something that I'm going to be surprised. Like, really? This is going to be the thing you're going to get pissed off at? You know. I mean, but also add to it, since they have...
They're like, Mike, stop running around the block naked. Like, it's getting weird. The neighbors are complaining.
Yeah, I can't.
Really, Dad? Really, Dad?
Oh, it's state law, huh? Oh,
you're the parents. I get it. Ugh. You tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what? That little Timmy saw it. So what? He saw it.
Yeah.
It's part of nature.
I bet you love the plaintiffs more than me, the defendant.
Yeah, whatever, Dad.
End scene. It should be interesting. And then the girlfriend will be there, then the dog will be there. So all three of us being pretty condensed to one room should be an interesting adventure. I'm sure I won't bring it up on the podcast whatsoever.
So what do you got before we get out of here?
Well, I'm cleaning. How do you react when, like, cops are nearby, out of curiosity?
I'm okay. Alex, my lovely fiance, is awful at it. First off, I love her to death. She's the worst backseat driver of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Next door driver of all time. She'll be like, cops coming! Oh, you're going... And then I'll be like, I'm going exactly the speed limit, mm-hmm. like whatever. Because I'm not a fast driver. I've said this before. I'm kind of an old man in the middle-aged man's.
You basically hit it on cruise the second you hit the speed limit.
Right. Like if it's 65, I'm going like 68. Like that's kind of me. Like,
yeah.
And she'll be like, there's a cop there. I'm like, so what? Like I'm just driving past him going 68. And everyone, like, you know, we're all in a caravan here. Like we're all just driving. I don't get too nervous, but yet I've been pulled over at least 15 times in my life. She's been pulled over none. Not one time.
Really?
Not one time. She claims.
A clean zero. Not like.
Do you want to come on the podcast to defend this?
Come on. Didn't you do the intros once for the show? It's not new.
Yeah. Come talk in the bro.
We got a guest.
Hey, folks.
Oh, hey. It's my beautiful fiance that claims she's never been pulled over by anyone.
I have never been pulled over by a policeman ever in my entire life. Ever. Yeah,
not even for something like lights, like a out back light or something like that.
A Bob Backlund light?
No, nothing.
No.
Nope.
Like
nothing.
Well, did they ever ask you to perform weird things on them?
She's shaking her head yes.
She's like,
I've never been pulled over.
AKA Mrs. Never, no points. No, no points here.
No, I've never actually been pulled over before.
No, I don't believe
that. That's usually a jinx thing. That's how I got pulled over the first time. Like, I remember being like, I went to like the age of 24. And I remember having a job, and like everybody saw my, yeah, I got pulled over, got 6 points, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, a little, ha ha, never in my life have I ever been pulled over. 4 months later, I have 8 points on damn license.
So what do you got before we get out?
Well, I'm cleaning.
You could put the microphone.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
Or just hold it all.
That's my free flow podcasting move. Just hold it in my hand, my microphone.
Yeah.
But I'm cleaning out my apartment. I'm throwing away a lot of stuff, and
right. Hopefully it's all your stuff because your stuff is terrible.
Well, basically, like today. I tore down like Izzy's dresser drawer that she brought up when she moved.
You
in.
Tore her dresser drawer down. Well, she very nice of you.
Yeah, she didn't want it anymore. She pretty much said it's junk. It's cracked and everything, so I'm not going to give it away. Plus, it weighs about 500 pounds or whatever. So
it'd be great if you were just like, we're moving.
Goosh. Didn't have the job. Sorry.
Oops. Sorry about that sweater.
So I tore it all down, and you come by my apartment and all. My apartment is not, like, right off the main road of the apartment complex. Like, you have to make a right, and you have to go up a hill, and you have to swing it around to come to my complex. So I tore down her dressers, and I'm bringing all the parts down, and I'm throwing it away. And God knows why, there was a cop in the parking lot. He was not parked. He was... like in the middle of the road, like kind of, I guess, looking for something or whatever.
Right.
And it just, I got so weirded out and nervous about it. I didn't know what to do. And I'm like bringing stuff over there. But like every time I'm like, all right, play cool. Don't look.
This
don't
is
look
a good question,
cop.
Though. What could you be arrested for? Like I could be arrested for. Taking free Wi-Fi, cable box, downloading movies, stuff like that.
I never downloaded a movie illegally. It's just a weird thing.
Okay, officer.
All
right,
I'm
Sheriff.
I'm having a conversation
Sheriff
with you.
Burlew.
Damn right, Sheriff. I'd watch that show.
I've drank underage before, 900 years ago.
Yeah, I've done that in the past way long ago.
I'm just trying to think of what I could actually be arrested for.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the pot thing. I'm trying to think. I mean, technically, I stole that 12-cent washer from Lowe's.
They're like, it would be great if they pulled you and you're like, I didn't do it. They're like, look at your Facebook video, and then played it to you. Yeah.
I did that. I've never done anything like out of the ordinary, like, okay, I'm going to get cop trouble.
Well, welcome to the Good Citizens Podcast, where we talk about how to obey the law.
Well, excuse me. Yep. I'm trying to talk about, I guess, possibly, like, as I was throwing away the stuff, like, they have, like, a...
No, I'm saying our stories are not that great. Like, we're rebels.
Yeah, all right.
We stole a nut.
Fine, I'll start a drug cartel. Is that what you want the show to be?
Yes. All right. We stole a nut and drank underage. That's basically what we're going with.
Yeah, I guess I did that, too. Yep. I feel so bad about myself.
But, sorry.
But it's just so awkward. Like, they were very heavy pieces from the dresser, so, like, I would... bring like two pieces, and I would see him in the distance. I'm like keeping my head down. I'm like, all right, play cool. Don't get
it. If you got shot because of your dresser, not that awesome. But.
No, I wouldn't enjoy it. I mean, I guess it would be a podcast.
So what
story.
What are you thinking? Like the cops, like there he is.
Well, it's like I made like six different trips, and the guy wasn't moving. And like I'm like through my head, I'm like, I mean, is he looking at my car? Did I do? It just like
there he is, the dresser. Yeah, that guy. You're chasing him.
So like halfway through, like I grabbed the last couple pieces and I just put them back in the garage and I closed the garage and then like 20 minutes later he drove away. So I'm just kind of like,
they're like, mean, we've got enough edit for this. Like all the there's someone on the roof.
I just get so awkward. I know I didn't do anything, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, shit. I'm just worried. Oh, yeah, and I came back later and I put out my recyclables, and as I was walking back, he finally started driving away and I didn't know what to do, so I just started waving at him.
It'd be awesome if you just like were putting out your recyclables and he just beat the hell out of you. Like, I found you.
Does this look like paper? No, it's styrofoam. What are you putting in there for?
But anyway, bro, I think it's time to go. What do you think?
I guess that sounds correct.
But anything to promote?
I'll promote my Facebook page.
Your Facebook page?
Yeah. I'll figure out this talking thing eventually.
One day.
Yeah, Michael Berlew Random Stuff on Facebook. Facebook.com/TheBurl721. Keep on going with Tonight on the Walking Dead. Episode's been decent as of late, so, you know, fingers crossed. And getting a lot of feedback for it, so, you know, enjoy that. And I'll be coming up with new things as I go down to Georgia, so... Facebook.com/TheBurl721.
You should do Burlow Went Down to Georgia.
Should I start fiddle plating?
Yeah. Plating?
Yeah.
So fiddle plating is when you take your fiddle and put food on top of it, right?
No. That's when you just bang it across a metal plate. No. I mean, you know, real musicians don't like
it. Actually, when you go down to Georgia, you should take like an English class.
Probably. But I might fit in with that. Damn right, English plating.
Anyway, guys, it's time to go.
The numbers went down in Georgia for some reason this week.
The numbers went down in Georgia.
We looked for a fight.
They were looking for a podcast to listen to instead of this. But one thing I will promote is the comedy show at Tap House 15 on March 29th. I want to say, hold on. March 29th, headliner Kenny Garcia. With Rob Apple, Joe Carney, and Rob Apple, Joe Conti, and Sharon Simon. So,
those Joe Carney fans are going to show up pissed off.
I know how much reach we have. But, Berlew, next week's your last week.
Yeah, buddy.
So, we'll make it happen. I have a special guest for you. I have a surprise. So tune in for that.
Is it me?
Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Climb aboard. We'll search for tomorrow.